Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
This is January 14th, 2021, and this is episode 155 of Transmission. And for those who are watching, some people listen via podcast. By the way, this is available as a vidcast and a podcast. But Dan said, you know, you look very clean cut today. The only difference is I'm not wearing a hat. So if anyone's jarred or alarmed, I'm not wearing my hat. That's it. It's an occasion unto itself.
Yes. Yeah. And then also we've got our mascot, Bubo, the radical robot bird here to say hi. And then I'm going to move him because
we'll be all transfixed.
I can't see anything. It's right in front of my face.
Okay. Fare thee well, Bubo.
Bye-bye. We're flying off. I mean,
boo-bye. That's nice sound effects.
There you go. Okay, and Lena and Winnie are watching. Hey. Good morning. That's great.
Nice.
Training Winnie early.
Yeah,
radicalism and podcasting.
Yeah. Just for those who don't know who we are by this point, I'm Mark Van Stonek. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct Mike at the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And so today, you know, the last couple of episodes have kind of been inspired by some articles and some chatter and conversation. And so today we were reflecting on this article that came out recently, basically around the idea of that there's perhaps some problem with leftists suddenly getting all excited that, you know, massive tech companies are deplatforming people and also raising the very serious concern that this insurrection is going to be used to pass all kinds of laws suppressing protest, which is something that folks have been trying to do
for years. You know,
For years.
But then, especially
though, since the uprisings this summer, and so we wanted to talk about all of that.
Yeah, I mean, I should have known, but like I remember, I was just the other day I was driving and listening to NPR, and they're talking about how they're passing legislation to crack down on these sorts of violent protests. And then the person commented, it's like, yeah, this is the same bill that we tried to pass this summer. I'm like, wait a second. These are moderates and Republicans who proposed that bill. Now they're using that. And so one thing I can say about Americans as a generalization is we tend to not be committed to the long view. And we tend to not
That's such a nice way of putting it, Mark.
We tend to not understand history. I mean, not like obviously there are exceptions, but it's part of I feel like it's part of the national character that we're short-sighted. And so this article, I found this article someone posted and it was resonating with me, even though like it's a little sloppy in some points. It's not like the best article ever. But the point is, isn't it weird when leftists suddenly get excited about flexing the muscles of the police state to arrest protesters, even if they're shitwad protesters, and are excited about giving social media platforms more power to control speech? Now, having said that, I totally understand this other perspective, which is, look, these businesses are about making money, and they're not going to invest money. They're not going to lose money by supporting like fascists. So it just makes good business sense. At the same time, like, am I going to be sad if Donald Trump gets arrested? No, but let's recognize that there would be consequences for those of us on the left if we got too excited and pushed these things too quick and too far. So we need to think about
that. You know, and one of the things that this all makes me think about that we were discussing before we came on here is that, you know, part of the problem with using terms over and over and over again is that you forget that we need to define terms. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, coming from the world of science and math, you know, one of the really important things whenever we were discussing some kind of concept or whenever we were learning about something new is that you have to define your terms. And this is why if you ever read a scientific research paper, you know, one of the first sections of the paper is the methods section, where the person talks about what they did, how they did it, why they did it, and what are the terms that they're using to describe what they're doing. Because without that, if you just jump into the results section and the conclusion section, you may really have no idea what the person is talking about.
Or you're just going to grossly misinterpret it.
Yeah, which is, you know, what we've certainly seen ad nauseum during this pandemic, when suddenly all these people that know nothing about immunology are suddenly experts in immunology because they did research on the internet. And so, you know, in this political discourse, we really spend very little time, at least this is what I've noticed, you know, defining terms and talking about what are the basic issues. So, you know, for example, in this area of policing and protest, I've really seen almost nothing that actually starts with what's at issue here. Right. That starts with, all right, any social grouping has boundaries. Any social grouping has organizations that enforce the boundaries and methods of enforcing boundaries. Mm-hmm. And so the real question is not, do we like this particular institution, but what are the boundaries that are being enforced? What are the boundaries that we would like to have enforced? What are the boundaries that we think we need for a good and just society? And to start the conversation there and then move to, okay, so given all of that, what sort of institution do we need?
Everything gets lumped together. So like we talk about police, right, and you say, well, you know, we should really, you know, limit the purview of the police or maybe even abolish them. If you start saying that, like, what about all the murderers? As though like that's, because in our head, that's what we think of. Right. On television, it's all about murder and drugs. Like, so we think, oh no, we're going to have murder and drugs everywhere without the police. Not realizing like most of what the police do isn't that. Like we don't take a step back and analyze, because the word police is at this point an unhelpful umbrella term that covers over and even obscures a whole host of different functions.
Right. You know, a perfect example of this, right, is that, you know, it was just relayed to me the other day, a conversation somebody had with a very senior police officer in the Minneapolis police force, who, having followed some of the recent discussions about getting some more funding for alternate 911 responses, particularly around mental health, which was something that I was really involved in making happen, who said, yeah, absolutely. We should be having all kinds of different 911 responses. And he said, you know, the percentage of times that I've had to deal with somebody who was dangerous and had a weapon over the course of my entire career was maybe 20% of the time. But probably less. And he said, so at least 80% of the calls were things that you don't have to have somebody like myself, who's designated as a police person, to deal with. I just share that to point out that even somebody within that institution, when approached with having a conversation about okay, what is actually going on and what do we need and what do we want and how do we want things to look, can clearly recognize that there are all kinds of different possible ways of creating boundaries and dealing with people that need help. But all of that gets obscured when we're not having those kind of real issue down to earth conversations, but are really just dealing with these abstractions and these terms that most people don't have any agreement as to what they mean.
Well, and so even we could get bogged down in terms all day, but like another one that gets thrown out that's confusing is just the blanket term violence. So if someone said, hey, do you think we should crack down on violent protest? My first instinct would be like, yeah. But then in my mind, this is where it blows people's minds. Burning down the third precinct wasn't particularly violent to me. See, this is where it gets weird, right? Because in most Americans' mind, I'm pretty sure that's a pretty very close to being morally equivalent to storming the Capitol, because it's all scary to them. So even having that conversation, so this is why I get nervous, you know. So even, you know, I'm just jumping to Stefan's comment. I'm excited about it. Technically, according to the International Bill of Rights, propagation of bigoted views should be banned legally as a violation of the basic human right to be free from discrimination and incitement to discrimination. If this started to be applied, I would accept it as a good reformist step, the way I accept various other reformist steps which set up various civil or economic human rights. On the surface of that, I agree, but I also remember a number of states tried to pass a law that said saying anti-cop stuff was hate speech.
Right.
So here's a great example. If you're increasing the capacity to enforce these, like if this is an expansion of police powers to crack down on hate speech, and then they start saying, if I say, fuck the police, and they say that's hate speech, oops. So it gets tricky. It gets tricky, especially when it's Mark Zuckerberg isn't enforcing this stuff because of his concern for human rights, I don't think. I think it's a monetary decision, or at least it is partly that. So it gets very messy when we start thinking about how do we protect, like, it's not, to me, it's not worth clamping down on what we think of as fascism now if it clamps down on leftist movements. I do not want just being left in the middle. It's kind of where I'm coming
left from. In the middle.
I see what you did there.
Well, let's go through some more comments and then get back to it. I have a couple thoughts in response to what you just said.
Some good news from Kathleen. Good morning. Thanks to Mark, I watched History of Swear Words with the inestimable Nicolas Cage. Thanks for corrupting me. Now I swear like a sailor. Lol.
It's really a great show. It's super fun. It's
insightful. It's witty. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
It's deep. It does everything and more. Just like Nicolas Cage. Tyler says you can't fight fascism by expanding the police state.
Right.
A lot of people would share that sentiment.
Yep.
Series writes, Americans are reactionary and low-skilled at accountability and emotional intelligence, period. It definitely, it's like baked into our institutions to be, like our institutions do not encourage these things. Mm-hmm. So you have to really fight hard to be skilled at accountability and emotional intelligence in our society. Mark writes, the US federal system, manufacturing consent and crushing dissent since 1792.
That's great.
Ellen writes, as far as unexpected stances for leftists, in a meeting yesterday, people were saying we should not legislate police unions from being allowed because of precedent for other unions. Battles should be fought politically in arenas where unions are already strong. I mean, that's another, oh my God, that's a tricky one too. Like, cause I think unions are important except for police unions, but for all kinds of reasons that are hard. Like you get lost in the weeds trying to explain how a police union isn't the same as another union. Mm-hmm. It gets really complex. So you can't just say at the blanket statement, unions are always great because in that case, they're not. Ellen writes, they desecrated the hallowed halls of democracy last week, Mark. How violent can you get? Yeah, there's been a lot of talks about how holy, that basically they desecrated a temple That's part of their logic for why that's bad.
Which is pretty blasphemous on the face of it.
Yeah, for how most of us use the term holy. Does that make Nancy Pelosi a priest? A high priestess.
High priestess. Yes. What a scary thought. Of ice cream, maybe.
Ellen writes, I can accept treason, but I draw the line at stealing TVs from Target. That's another one. Like, people are using the terms. And again, like, if you want to include me with this, it's fine. Like, but if you want to say, oh, they're horrible because they're treasonous and unpatriotic, then you have to accept that you're talking smack at me too, because I'm also treasonous and unpatriotic. To me, the problem isn't that they're un-American or they hate America. I don't like America. The problem is that they want to move towards less justice and more oppression and white supremacy, and I hate those things. Yeah. So I'm all in favor, like, you know, Malcolm X, you could say that he was unpatriotic, but I'm like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the issues to me is this all brings up, and, you know, as you guys are bringing up all these great different examples and comments, and this may seem like a non sequitur, but I don't think it is. It is to ask ourselves, like, how do we spend our time? Right? Like, do we spend our time thinking about important things and reflecting on different decisions? And, you know, there's a guy that's got a podcast about, you know, like philosophy in everyday life. Because he thinks that people don't spend enough time thinking about philosophy, which is actually an important thing. And, you know, we spend most of our time managing possessions, overworking ourselves at low-paying jobs. This is the average across all people. You know, or worrying about activities. We actually spend very little time in thoughtful, reflective conversations. And yet, as you can see, even in, you know, 17 minutes with bringing up a topic and having a bunch of people comment on it, there's actually a lot that can be talked about, right? There's a lot of nuance. There's a lot of different issues. And, you know, as we talked about yesterday with ceding theology to a very narrow group of, you know, very elitist conservatives, without the church actually taking on the role of public theologian, you know, you lose out on a lot, right? And so, you know, to me, this is all just an encouragement to think about, like, yeah, you know, do we really spend our time deeply talking about things and thinking about things? And that's really important. Because when we don't do that, we give it over to, you know, people like Susan Collins, who's just a complete moron and, you know, writes something that says that when the Capitol was stormed, she thought it was the Iranians coming to get her.
What the living hell? Yes, I missed that nugget.
That was her summary of what was going on. Oh my God, the Iranians are coming to get me. You know, these are the people that are running the country.
Well, you know, and look, like, this is, it's hard. This is hard stuff for people. It's right. Not because it's hard to, it's not like because people lack the capacity. It's because it's like, there's almost a conspiracy against people. Like, think about it. In my circles, people assume that theology is done in the academy and that it should trickle down to the rest of us who are like eager little suckling pigs. And I hate that.
Or not eager.
And so
I just don't even pay attention.
The best theologians I know listen, like, are engaged with people, and then they bring it up into the academy, which is how it should work, if you ask me. But so it makes sense that people think, oh, that kind of deep philosophical stuff, that's ivory tower. It's because that's been presented to us as the way in which it's been done. But, like, it's classist as shit. Like, this other thing people say, because like, when you said stuff like, well, how much time do we spend thinking? I've heard all sorts of people say, well, that's a privilege of the rich. Us, like, poor people can't sit around and think about stuff because they're too tired. I'm like, that's classist just to say that. Yeah. Because look, I mean, I know tons of working class people without formal education who spend time thinking about stuff because it's important to them. It's not like all they do is work and sleep and eat and poop and fuck. Like, that's not it. That's kind of a weird animalistic way of thinking about poor people.
Liberation theology. Liberation theology is some of the most profound and insightful thinking of the last 150 years came about because, you know, groups of landless peasants would get together at night and talk and think about things.
For sure.
That's how that came about.
Now, having said that, we need as a society to create more space for more of this stuff, which is why there's been pushes in the past that have kind of gone dormant to this glorious idea of like 30 hours a week work week should be the max. Like, I think we need to consider that because people need more space to really get into this stuff and not leave it to the luxury class to have all their free time for politicking.
All right. So now we're way behind on comments.
Oof. Kathleen brings up there are a bunch of clergy groups on Facebook that are anti-gay, yet no one accuses them of hate speech. You're getting at the important part is like we choose what hate speech we want to enforce.
Right. What the boundaries are. Yeah.
Yeah. And the people in power get to decide which ones they think they want to go after. So we have to be, we should be cautious. Jeremy writes, speaking of reactionary, a freshman representative from Georgia is filing articles of impeachment against Biden on Inauguration Day.
It's because she's a complete whack job.
Because he's going to bring in Antifa and Black Lives Matter to like pillage the whites. Series writes, how do we deal with American libertarians co-opting concerns about expanding federal and police powers to enforce the idea of no political and community accountability? Oh my God, that's such a big question. Yeah.
Yeah, and so this is another term which is a great example of this, right? Libertarian. I mean, this is a term that gets thrown around that, as far as I can tell, means at least 700 different things. And until you actually drill down.
Only 700, Dan, what a lightweight. Oh,
I know. But that was all I could keep track of.
Fair enough.
I maxed out Bubo's memory. Those 700 things. So until we start talking about this, because, you know, I mean, a lot of these militia groups describe themselves as libertarians. The Paul family describes themselves as libertarians. All kinds of rewilding young white dudes describe themselves as libertarians. I mean, the whole thing is just all over the map. So it becomes a term that's not helpful.
Well, and then if you're traditionally, like if you went to Europe and called yourself a libertarian, that means it's a form of leftist.
Right.
So like here we might use the term libertarian socialist, which blows people's minds, which is just, it gets really cumbersome. And each of those groups use the same words in different ways. So like when I say the word socialist as anti-authoritarian socialist, I mean something very different than when like a Maoist uses
it. Stalinist uses that term, right?
Now we can keep defining these words or, we can explain ourselves. And also on the flip side, we should be curious and not assume we know what people mean when they say the words.
Yeah.
And then start saying, well, let's talk. And this is why politics needs to be done on the ground floor primarily, is because it's in those working out of the implications of it that you really understand what things mean. Mm-hmm. So like we have to work on the ground and grassroots, and then it has to trickle up. Anything that trickles down is going to be messed up. Adam writes, convicted participants in the Capitol putsch, I never know how to say that word, putsch, are already getting out in bail. These are violent, quote unquote, protesters, are labeled the same as peaceful, actual protesters. Peaceful protesters have gone through hell in courts fighting attempted 70-year sentences for just being there when a window was broken. This is just one example.
Yep.
Well, I had someone comment on Facebook, like, I said, we got to interrogate the hell out of this equivocation. And he was trying to wrap his mind around it. And so I used the example, like we all know that the violence used by slave owners to keep slaves in check is different than the violence of slave uprisings. And so we can't just criminalize violence as one monolithic thing. Never mind protesting and property destruction, which is like a different kind of action. So it gets really messy. David writes, I'm concerned about the precedent of bringing thousands of troops into the capital to protect a leadership transition. Yeah, we should be concerned. All this sets the table for future insurrections that can be actually successful.
Yeah.
The same with...
I mean, I mentioned this the other day, the paradox of, you know, defeating this insurrection and not having actual martial law declared is that we now have practical martial law declared, which is, something we need to be really concerned about. Like, if we need 20,000 troops in Washington to inaugurate a president, I would say we've got a problem.
Well, also we're seeing people are really pushing for Pence to basically invoke the 25th, which we should be concerned about that too, even though I generally agree that'd be maybe better than some other things. But like, do we really want the vice president just to go and collude with the cabinet, a majority of the cabinet, to just have a coup against the president if they can just pull enough votes? Shouldn't there be more to it than that? In this case, it might be better, although Pence versus Trump is not like a fight I want to pick a winner for. But these things have consequences down the road. Like right now, we're experiencing a bunch of bad consequences from the past coming home to roost. Mm-hmm. Our system is fundamentally screwed up is kind of where I'm going with this. And we need to not just work within the system. This is the time, like we've talked about this before, we have to start thinking, well, maybe we need a different system. Because maybe the system just goes to this direction in this place and we need something better and different. Mark writes, the Capitol is a temple, though, isn't it? I mean, there is the apotheosis of Washington painted on the interior of the dome. Talk about state as religion.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, these things are hallowed by the way Americans treat them. Like that big, gigantic statue of the god Lincoln in his throne of power. Like these function as much as American civil religion as anything else does. And again, that's, I think, part of the problem. We treat these things like the Constitution is treated like scripture, and that's really messed up. Gus writes, Cory Doctorow, one of my favorite thinkers on tech, had a nice piece the other day on the complicated ways that censorship works, even when we call it moderation, and goes on to talk about how we also need antitrust actions that keep us from just being limited to 2 to 3 social media platforms. You know, this is where it all connects. You're right. Like part of the problem is like why it's complicated to have Facebook moderating its comments is, you know, I personally think Facebook should be nationalized because it's functioning as it's functioning like a telephone company or something that people use for their daily regular lives. It's not just a service being offered. It's part of the national infrastructure at a certain point. And this is where capitalism, like having one billionaire having power over people's communications, is very terrifying. And we have to think about, well, what do we do about that? So at least breaking it up is one of the ways that we can have accountability for these giant megacorps. Gus also writes, you can find the piece here. It's pluralistic.net. The article is called The Old Crow is Getting Slow. It's a nice title for something.
Or Gus will be putting that in the transmission library archives.
Yes. Which we're going to then compile and bury deep in a glacier in Iceland for future posterity. Adam writes, the problem is that our systems are not interested in calling them what they are, white supremacists, because they don't call it what it is. These umbrella terms bleed over to the groups and individuals who are mislabeled as violent.
Yeah, and this is, you know, what you're getting at here, Adam, is what I was talking about earlier about defining basic terms and issues of boundaries, right? Is that, so in the case of our country, the way the system is bounded is by white supremacy. So white people are favored. The system works for white people, works far less well for everybody else. And so then all the institutions arise out of that bounded condition and are designed to reinforce that bounded condition. And so, yes, I mean, until you name what kind of bounded condition you want, until you say, well, what we want is justice for everyone. What we want is actual equality. What we want is a kind of jubilee resetting of the economic system so that much of what has been stolen from one set of people gets redistributed to other people, back to those people. Once, you know, we want a system in which our politics and economics are designed to support human beings and not capital. I mean, until you name all those boundary conditions, it becomes really, really hard to imagine what these new institutions are going to look like. But as you start doing that, you at least begin to be able to imagine something different.
Jim writes, have you read the brilliant book, The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, The Fight for a Human Future at the New Frontier of Power by Shoshana Zuboff, copyright 2019? I'm convinced that if we collectively understand how we are being mined and used, we can make changes for honesty and integrity in what we choose to consume. I think that's part of it.
Yeah.
Adam writes, history of swear words is so good. Again, watch it. Especially those of you who, especially those of you who are like, swears are for dumb people. Stefan writes, though international law actually defines hate speech and discrimination, and that precludes both framing fuck the police as hate speech and also, for example, framing affirmative actions or safe spaces as reverse discrimination, as right-wingers would want to try to twist it. Well, I don't, but the United States doesn't recognize international law. I mean, this is the problem. It's like, I agree, like maybe if there were a better community defining, like if we were bound by different laws, I would be more willing to have this conversation, but I just know.
To me though, Stefan, what you're bringing up is very important, which is the recognition that yes, I mean, lots of people have, lots of people, but a minority of people have thought about these things, have written great statements. You know, the International Declaration of Human Rights is awesome, and it gets filed away in a drawer somewhere, and nobody reads it, nobody pays attention to it. And so, you know, you're right. I mean, I completely agree with you that what you're pushing for is let's get some of these well-defined, well-written things out into the public square, get people to be able to read and understand them, which again, in America, I mean, the average reading comprehension in America is less than eighth grade level. They can't read the International Declaration of Human Rights. They don't know what most of the words mean. That's a very significant problem, right? Why aren't we devoting billions of dollars to changing that, right? Why, you know, and this has to do with these original boundary conditions. We don't want a highly educated, highly sophisticated, highly engaged populace, right? I mean, capitalism doesn't want that. They want people, you know, just worrying about what some dog on Instagram is wearing, and then they can do whatever the hell they want with you.
Well, what were they wearing? The dog on
Instagram? I don't know.
Well, now I'm going to be thinking about that all day, Dan.
There you go. Got 100,000 followers, more popular than us.
I mean, this, and it comes
all
to
right.
how do we do democracy? Like, anyways. Vershal writes, why would you study philosophy in the new golden age of television? Amazon original programming could probably just keep you up to date on important stuff.
That's right.
Well, and this is complicated, like, because there are ways to, you can watch things that actually expand your intellectual horizons.
But, I think it's sarcastic.
No, I know, but like it's interesting. Like we have to, what gets produced and what gets created and how it gets pushed and what we choose. Like there's so many different angles and mushy pieces to this that we have to decide what we want. Yeah,
that's why the history of swearing is such a great show.
Yeah, it's the key to
very philosophical
whole thing. Adam writes, it would be exciting and really something different if they said, we will not allow white supremacists to undermine democracy, blah, blah, blah. Also, they're acting like these actions aren't already illegal. What is actually changing? that's the thing. We all know that the problem at the Capitol was that they didn't even enforce whatever they what they could. And we're now finding that there were some people with the Capitol Police and in the administration that were complicit. So that's, I mean, these laws, new laws cracking down won't change that.
Right.
Catherine writes, to build on Gus's point about monopolies, to some extent, a platform like Twitter with global reach, instant posting, and little to no moderation compared to other forms of broadcasting and publishing is kind of unprecedented in world history. How does that change the conversation about censorship?
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, it's unprecedented in terms of communication. But yeah, I mean, the monopolistic practices always end up in this very difficult situation, right? I mean, this is what happened with the railroads in the United States, and they basically owned food supply and food distribution because they could, set the price and could bankrupt farmers and could, get food to certain places and not food to other places. And yeah, and so once you have that level of power, it needs to be regulated in some way or broken up or something, because it tends to be very detrimental for the population at large.
Blazing through, regarding the idea that the poorest can't think, that's obviously classist. But the difference is now that our distractions are manifold. The little screens follow us everywhere. Approaching things with intention are in some ways more difficult than the early days of liberation thought. We have more than just the radio to turn off, and we have many more ways to distract ourselves. Well, and then there's a chicken and the egg piece to this too. Like, we can say we need to learn in order to be more engaged, but part of the reason people aren't more engaged is because they've learned that their engagement doesn't do much. So then they disengage. And so there's like lots of angles for reasons why we're kind of docile and uninformed as a populace. Yeah, and you're pointing out one of the big ones. We're bombarded. Ellen writes, a libertarian in the U.S. is anarchism, but for rich dudes. Yeah, I mean, we've been anarchism for rich dudes for a long time. I got to say, anarchy seems a lot more democratic than democracy. I mean, I have a lot of friends who call themselves into radical democracy instead of anarchism for that kind of reason. Again, with terms. Ellen Morey writes, who was the lady who broke in and met Reagan on the same day? I don't know what that's referring to.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
I want to know more. Anthony writes, I gave a cartoon clipping of the saying, which is the friend of your enemy of your enemy is not your friend, to a professor years ago. She still has it on her office door. LOL. Almost done with the comments. Well, Zeres writes, you can go to Tech for the People's site. They talk about all kinds of tech issues. By the way, how social media platform companies are functioning now is a result of how broadcast and the film and television industry paved the way for this, and the FCC is a shit show. Mm-hmm. Adam writes, right, Dan. And then regarding
we
need to clearly define all of those terms and what is and what is not equality, justice, etc., because people are using those terms to mean whatever they want without a systemic lens, for sure. In addition, we need to get out of the dictionary and into terms as they how they relate to power analysis. That's right. Yeah. And we're seeing how people are using the same words in opposite ways more and more in this society as people. The right wing is really good at appropriating leftist kind of jargon for right wing purposes all the time. Ceres writes, if we are going to deal with social media, we need to hold broadcast and entertainment, film, TV, and radio cable industry accountable for making conditions where we have only five media mega corporations. Right. Gus writes, Jim, Dr. Rowe has a pushback response to that book in a book his own called How to Destroy Surveillance Capitalism. And the two did a talk together that I'm looking forward to coming out on his podcast. Yeah. Ellen writes, now that 45's been impeached twice, his life could be called unprecedented. I see what you did there. It's a good pun. Ellen wins the pun prize for the day. And final comment from Adam. Libertarian has come to mean undercover Republican. When people talk about their values, it turns out they just don't want to publicly identify as Republicans. That's part of it.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Really great comments, great conversation. We love you all. And tomorrow's everybody's favorite day.
Fascism Friday.
See you tomorrow. All right. We'll see you then. Bye.